providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now, as promised, we are going to dive a bit more into individual sectors within the market as we are chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the Lion Share Pro website, which I will link to in the description for the weekend show. Dana, we're going to start with the banking sector because, boy, oh boy, it's back in the news. We had a little bit of calm, I guess, but a lot of people still looking at the banking sector saying the worst is not yet behind us. And then this week we had news of a banking takeover. We also had news of another bank having issues and going under. Overall, the banking sector not looking very strong. But I guess my question to you is, do you think we're going to hit a low sometime soon here in the banking sector?
You know, it's possible that we hit a short-term low because, technically speaking, I'm looking at the regional banks, and they are down. Obviously, the S&P and the mega caps and the headline indices have held up okay, even as, you know, some of the regional banks, the financials, have been trading closer to 52-week lows or at 52-week lows. So that has given us, that was a red flag that, okay, maybe not everything's so healthy in the market. So from that perspective, it was a heads up that, okay, even though the S&P was challenging rally highs a couple of days ago or at the end of April, maybe things aren't as healthy in the broader market as that would suggest, as the new highs would suggest. Furthermore, maybe things in the financial sector, in the regional banking sector, were not as healthy as maybe the Fed and the regulators would want us to believe when they announced, okay, your deposits are safe, mini crisis is over. Prices were not telling us the same story. So we saw, you know, the regional banks and other financials trading closer to 52-week lows than they were to rally highs like the major indices were. So that was certainly a red flag that maybe not things in the overall market weren't so healthy, and certainly things in the financials and regional banks were not necessarily as rosy as the headlines might make you believe. But I guess the one possible short-term factor going for the bulls, we are hitting maybe that 78 retracement on the regional banks from the 2020 low. If we get a reversal here today, we might have a short-term low in place there. Plus, we're hitting some support on the S&P and the Dow here. But from a longer-term perspective, I would say we're far from out of the woods, especially considering kind of a lack of fear out in the market, despite some of the new lows and some of the troubled sectors like we talked about.
Yeah, Dan, it's really a bifurcated market because you look at the people's reaction, it's kind of complacent. But to the point you made about the overall health of the market, we see that illustrated when you just compare something like the NASDAQ or the S&P 500 to what's going on in the Russell 2000. You know, when you think about it, a lot of the mega cap companies had just went through earnings season. So people are excited about Microsoft. They're excited about Apple. You know, a lot of the big old FANG stocks are still doing pretty good. But if you take those out, which are holding up the indexes, and you look at the market breadth, it's telling a different story. And when you look at the micro caps in the Russell 2000, they're near multi-year lows. So I'd love you to maybe discuss the point you made to us, what I thought was a great line, Dana, that you use market breadth as a lie detector to confirm or deny what you're seeing in the indexes.
Yeah, for sure. So, and we've spoken in the past about our models and our quantitative models, and how they're heavily geared towards breadth and internal type indicators. Again, 70 to 80% of the determinant of the direction of a stock is based on the direction of the overall market. So we wanted to identify which direction the overall market is headed and then align ourselves in that direction. So it's different. The broad market can be vastly different than what the cap-weighted popular averages are doing, and that's been the case, obviously, over the last month, especially where you have the mega caps, like you mentioned, the S&P 500, NASDAQ 100, testing rally highs or hitting rally highs, six-month highs, what have you. So looking good, especially if you're trading just those mega cap or popular averages. But on the flip side, you're seeing breadth statistics lagging. In fact, NASDAQ overall advanced decline line hitting 52-week lows of late, even as the NASDAQ 100 was hitting multi-month or six-month highs. So very bifurcated, as you mentioned. And the reason why we rely heavily on breadth type statistics in our models, because we want to, again, determine which direction the overall market is going and kind of use it as, like you mentioned, a lie detector based on or vis-a-vis what the major averages are doing. So recently, again, the S&P 500 holding up well. If you're trading just that index, things might not look so gloomy. But if you're measuring the breadth, you're looking at what the internals are doing, it's telling you that price, okay, they say price is truth. It's not always the case if it's not backed up by the breadth in the broader market, which has significantly lagged since, especially since the that short-term low in March. So as you mentioned, the micro caps are at 52-week lows, the regional banks at 52-week lows, even with the major averages holding up well. So that has given us a big heads up that things aren't as good as those major averages would have you believe, and has kept us very defensive over the last couple months or so, even, you know, once again, despite the seemingly good performance in the major averages.
Dana, one thing we hear about fairly regularly in bigger media is this kind of fear-greed index, where clearly there aren't a whole lot of investors that were really fearful out there, as we just saw the VIX. It was down at about 16-month lows. So clearly investors not overly scared in these markets, but at the same time, they're not taking the long side. And you balance that out with now the market pricing in 4 Fed rate cuts by January of next year. How do you see how investors are positioned here, balancing out that fear, greed, and then also carrying that onto Fed policy, where the market thinks the Fed's going to be cutting fairly soon?
Right. Well, as far as the Fed reads go, we don't pay attention a whole lot to that. So that's just noise to us. We do like to, when we see kind of investors, the investment community kind of all shifted to one side of the boat, it gives us a good indication that maybe fading the crowd is a good idea in that case. And I think that might be the case here, especially given some of the more quantifiable sentiment readings out there. So given, and in particular, in light of the fact that the internals and the breadth has been so poor, that's a major red flag, because it tells us, okay, if the short-term sentiment is complacent or even overly bullish, then that's telling us there's not a lot of hedging going on in terms of the investment community. So if we do start to see some more cracks, which is suggested by the bad breath and by the lagging of the broader market and the internals, if we do start seeing more cracks, people are not ready for that. Investors are not hedged against that. So if we start to see the mega caps and large caps start cracking, then for sure that type of a scenario, we could see the downside start to snowball as folks rush to get out the door or rush to put on hedges at that point. Because again, like you mentioned, sentiment is far from fearful right now, and in fact is more skewed towards the bullish side of things in the short term. So that's another red flag for sure. And like I said, that's something that could get the downside snowballing here if we do see more technical cracks in the larger cap averages, which has not happened yet, but certainly is we see the potential for that if the readings from the broader market are more accurate than the large caps, which has historically always been the case.
Well, Dana, if people are complacent, it's an interesting environment to see gold getting pretty close to breaking up to new all-time highs. We have gold at the time of this recording around 2056, so we're around 26, 27, so well above 26 now. So the precious metals have had a good run, and many people in the space are tying it to the news of the banking and all that stuff. But when you just look at it with a technical eye or with a quantitative eye, what do you make of this run in gold and silver? Do they have the legs to keep moving higher here, or are they getting close to being too overbought?
Yeah, so you have to look at the different durations. So in the short term, we're still not chasing here. We have a decent position on in gold, silver, and the miners as well. We would not be necessarily adding here unless it's into weakness. I think in the near term, there is room to pull back towards better support areas, better entry points. So again, we've got decent positions on there on the long side. We think they do eventually break out and put in a new major up leg. But in the short term, we wouldn't necessarily be chasing it. But from a longer perspective, like I said, we do think eventually these things, gold, precious metals, the complex does break out, especially in gold. And we do think it definitely has the legs for another major up move. If you consider, okay, the bounce off of the 2016 low up into that 2020 high. Okay, that was, 3 years ago now. So we basically moved sideways over the last 3 years and more or less storing up energy, storing up fuel, consolidating those gains into 2020 and working off some of that excessive bullishness. We talked about sentiment before, working off some of that excessive bullishness that built up into that 4 year rally. So I think after maybe some more consolidation, some more backing and filling, then we do have a better chance to break out and have it be a sustainable breakout and make more of a durable run higher. So that's what we're betting on. That's how we're positioned, but we would not be adding into strength here. In fact, we'd be a little hesitant to chase it. We'd be waiting for better entry points a little bit lower to add to our positions.
Okay, so kind of a buy the dip mentality, but not chasing it higher. What about other commodities? We hear a lot about copper and how there's this big supply shortage coming, but the copper price just hasn't responded, or oil that made a run higher and now has completely reversed that whole run. Any other commodities that are on your radar?
Platinum we like. It's more in tune with the precious metals complex. Copper we kind of like. We've got a small position in it now. It's obviously, it's got kind of tentacles in both the industrial and the economic landscape, as well as more of the metals complex. So I think it's okay that we do have a position in the copper miners as well, which look better to us. As far as crude oil, I think eventually we make another major low and also take a shot at another major up leg there. I don't know that we're ready yet, although we are down testing those recent lows again in crude oil. So if you've been patient waiting for a buying opportunity, now is not a terrible place to add a little bit, because we do think eventually commodities in general put in another major low and embark on another up leg in the big secular bull market. We're just not eager to get too aggressive in anything else, I guess, right now. Be a little bit more patient in that. So I guess precious metals complex is probably still the most intriguing to us from an intermediate term perspective.
Okay, thanks for sharing that on the commodity space, Dana. And when we think about the commodities, I usually think about how the dollar can be a headwind or tailwind to the sector. The U.S. dollars continue to sell off, partially because it's counterbalanced against six other currencies that have gone up. So I'd love to just get your take, because you look at things in isolation. What's your take on the greenback?
Yeah, obviously still in a downtrend. Has not been able to. It's testing, again, as well. It's testing the dollar index, testing those lows that we saw earlier this year. Has not been able to really mount any kind of a bounce off of there, which is concerning. So we certainly see downside in the short term for the dollar index. We've been earmarking kind of that 99 level for a while for maybe if we're going to take a stab at forming a major low in the dollar, we'd be looking around that 98, 99 level. And then it would take, obviously, it would take to get more confidence and more than just a short-term trade. There would be some technical challenges, some technical achievements, so to speak, to the upside before we get more aggressive in expecting, you know, a major move to the upside. So I guess benefit of the doubt is to the downside until proven otherwise. And probably that 98, 99 level would be a spot where if we were short, which we're not right now, we would certainly look to cover some of those shorts.
Wouldn't that be a pretty significant breakdown? Just anything below that 100 level. I'm looking at a monthly chart here and going back to 2015. That 100 level looks pretty important to me. So anything below there, to me, seems like it could open up the floodgates to even lower levels.
Yeah, again, we've got some support at 98 to 99. So maybe if people are looking at that nice round 100 number and we break that, that's where sometimes the psychology of investing comes in. You see the big round number broken and you see a lot of stops hit, people rush for the exits. And once the selling clears out, maybe that paves the way for kind of a reversal, a bounce, whether it's short term or intermediate term in nature.
Well, Dana, we've talked about gold. We talked about the dollar. I guess we should also talk about the cryptos, Bitcoin and Ethereum. Do you have any thoughts on the cryptoverse?
Yeah, you know, we're long both of those, the aforementioned. As long as we hold Bitcoin around that 28,000 level, we see upside to maybe 36,000 potentially. And again, we're not, you know, we have no religious affiliation with the cryptos at all. But just from technically speaking, you know, they've held up pretty well. And Ethereum, the same thing. If we can hold near the mid 1800s, we see upside to around the 2400-2500 level next. So again, we'll follow the rules, try to maintain discipline, and if those the levels I mentioned are broken to the downside, we'll pull the plug and reassess, wait for another opportunity or better prices to get back involved. But if those areas hold, we got a shot at another decent uplay, because we did break out, have pulled back immediately to those breakout levels, and so far holding. But we'll let, in this case, we'll let prices dictate where we go.
So if we step back and really take into account your strategy for all these different markets and how we have gold running higher, cryptos running higher, you're seeing weak breadth for the underlying averages. How does that play into the second half of this year and all the gloom and doom that we're hearing about a major recession coming and all the issues, even including the banking sector, that could really start to boil over in the second half of this year?
Right. We try not to ask the question why, you know, so I think that gets into the question, why are these markets doing what they're doing? But if we were to take a stab at it, I guess objectively, certainly it doesn't paint a very rosy macro picture. And that would line up with, you know, what we're seeing from our objective quantified models that we're looking at, which have had us and continue to have us positioned very defensively. So until that changes, we have no reason to change our investment posture, our outlook for markets going forward. And again, from a longer term perspective, a lot of the excesses in the market that built up now just into the 2022 high, but even, you know, as we've discussed previously, into peaks into 2000 and 2007 that were not really allowed to work themselves out and correct themselves, that's all still embedded in the system. So from a long-term perspective, there are still a lot of excesses in the system that don't be Mr. Gloom and Doom, but if things really started to snowball to the downside, there is a lot of excess, a lot of risk that is still embedded in the system that could still work its way out and could be really a disastrous scenario for, you know, the economy, but investors in general who are not, I don't think, expected or ready for that type of a scenario. So all that being said, we'll take it in an intermediate term basis based on our models. And if they have us positioned defensively like we are right now, so be it. If things turn better from a quantitative perspective, we've got no problem changing course and trying to make some gains on the upside when opportunities present themselves. So we'll try to stay objective and disciplined, and that's the hallmark. That's how you stay out of trouble, because if you go subjectively too much, you're relying on human nature, and that really never pans out for investors.
Yeah, that's well said there, Dana. I do appreciate how you really do stick to your models and don't try to ask the question why, just trade the markets, right? And be nimble. Don't get too dug into any one position or any one sector, because things change and you need to be able to adapt to changing market conditions. Dana, it's great having you on the show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Please keep in touch with Shad and me through email, as well as please go back through our website and podcast, listen to all our daily editorials, and let us know what you think of any of the companies that we featured throughout the week. Dana and everybody else, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.